The following is a special presentation of the Buccaneers Sports Network. This is the Jay and Keith Show. Two broadcasters, two microphones, and one meticulously scripted podcast.
You what?
Just kidding. Get it, J-K? You get it.
That's what I thought was so funny. It's not funny.
Alongside Keith Brake, here's the voice of the Bucs, Jay Sandoz.
All right, got a little pod today, and a little special pod. Dr. Richard Sander, the athletic director at ETSU. We'll go a little inside the dome to get some updates on several things. But before we do that, we did a pretty heavy basketball-only transfer portal. We're going to give the final names of the ETSU players that have entered the portal in the spring. We're not going to rehash the fall. We already did that a while ago.
We went through all those. Tyler Rydell, Baron May, a number of others decided to go elsewhere.
I probably should let that play. Here we go.
I mean, you can talk over it. It's kind of designed to talk over a little bit. Doing a little bit of vamping, right? Happy talk.
Portal watch.
That's what they call it in the TV business. Happy talk. That's the D block or the E block, depending on the show.
Yeah. And then of course, once it goes to the break, you can do the fake laughs as they're doing the outro. And, I really don't like you, but I got to smile. Speaking of liking, I don't have a transition. All right. Offensive players.
I don't like any of this.
That's true. But it depends. Yes, I don't like to see people go, but if they don't, and a lot of these guys look like they gave it a go, they didn't like their slot, they want to go play more, I get it. Couple of quarterbacks in the portal. Timmy Dorsey kind of already reported, but he went in the spring. And then Drew Gregg, the former Carson Newman, former Greenville Green Devil, is in the portal. One running back, Amir Dindy, and a wide receiver from Knox Catholic, Tommy Witten, the third. So those are the offensive guys.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, Trey Lamb brought in, three quarterbacks? So the quarterback room is going to be crowded. Running back room was pretty crowded. And especially in a system where you're not going to necessarily use as many running backs, that situation can be kind of tough for a guy. So you sit down with him, like, this is where we see you. This is what your role's likely to be. And you give the player the information and you let them make an informed decision about where their future lies, and obviously making the decision that your future lies elsewhere. Winton, kind of the same thing, but I think he had a little bit more of a shot to play. But I think certainly Dendy and Winton in particular, I think all four of those guys can find a place where they can make an impact.
Agreed. I think there's a chance, especially I think with Dendy in a crowded backfield. And Dendy's a little bit different because he falls in a category of where it was very heavy two back, want to do some things, or at least rotate. This is a bit different system. There's going to be just one back. You know, you're so used to seeing a couple different backs either on the field at the same time or get a series here and there. I don't know that there's going to be as many opportunities with the way that Coach Lamb wants to run the offense for running backs. So I think there's going to be less running backs, more receivers. That being said, a lot of receivers were brought in, and you start looking at
the top three pass – top. I think it's four of the top five pass catchers, and the top three came from Gardner-Webb with the staff. So that's a lot of guys in front of you all of a sudden.
Yeah, and if you sit there looking and you're outside the top, let's say, six – probably six receivers. Let's say you go two deep there, you're outside that. What are the chances of how often are you really going to get on the field? I think Tommy Witten wanted to go play more. And again, don't fault any of these guys. No offensive or defensive linemen went in. I'm just going to put a caveat on that because I'm going to read some linebackers, and some of them used to play outside linebacker / DN in the old system.
They were kind of an edge guy.
But really linebackers, if you will. Right. So Tyron Brooks, Jordan Hoskins, the two transfers that came in a year ago from SEMO.
Missouri State.
They're in the portal. Cam Garnett was a running back, then linebacker. He's in there. Ike McConnell, Blake Howard, all those linebackers are in. And another healthy secondary is five guys. Josh Trice, Khalil Anderson. We know Sheldon Arnold, Tyree Rainey, and Robert McNeil, the freshman.
And Arnold has already landed.
Yeah, Central Florida, right?
He's a UCF, yeah.
So those are the 14, if my math is correct.
Sounds right. I was disappointed to hear that McNeil went in because I thought he was a good young player. I think he's got a lot of promise. But again, they brought in how many corners? Three? Was it three corners?
Three plus,
Bowdry, Royal. Is it Lee? least two.
We're missing one.
I think there was one other. Yeah, there was one other one. It's Cam Sims.
Cam Sims
from
Mercer.
We forgot about the starter that had the unbelievably athletic interception in the spring game. Yeah, that guy. That guy. So
Then Javon Henderson's still there as well.
Yeah, he's looks like he's going to take a step forward. And it's a pretty stacked room right now on the two deep. If you go farther down, like if you're McNeil and you want to play, and you want to play now, that's kind of tough. But he missed all of last year, ended up redshirting. And because he broke his arm, I think it was in camp, and that was just a freak fluky injury, but still derailed him from the perception of it, and he goes in the portal. To your point, Ike McConnell was a guy that they were looking at possibly being maybe more of a 4-3 defensive end, bulk him up a little bit and see where that goes, but he did not register a tackle in the spring game. So I don't think he was out there very much for the gold team or the blue team. But especially for the gold team, would have been on the gold team. So, if you didn't get on the field in the spring game, I get it. I think that's a pretty clear indication of you're not going to play. So you have two options. You can either ride it out because you think you might play in the future, or you just really like being at ETSU. Or you can go in the transfer portal and find somewhere else to go where you can play and you can be on the field and you can make an impact. And I think given the choice, you know, rightly or wrongly, players want to play. I don't fault them for that.
No. And lost in the shuffle is, you know, ETSU did sign some high school kids that weren't in the spring. So there are more kids coming in. So you got to start thinking about that as well. You know, what are some of the guys coming in? What position are they going to play? What kind of look are they going to get? You know, I'm already here. So there's a lot going into that. And those, again, obviously the biggest one everybody's going to talk about, Sheldon Arnold. But there are guys on this list that I think, you know, depending on how things went, could have been contributors, could have did some things. But, again, they start looking at the list, where it's going to be, and – you know, ultimately, they, you know, players want to play, if I could quote Murray Bartow. That's not quite the quote, but you know me.
Well, you know, the bottom line is, Jay, players make plays.
Yeah, and players want to play one way or another. So, That being said, those are the 14 guys in. So, that's the full update from last show from basketball, this show football. And now it's time to go inside the dome.
The man in charge.
Doc. I shouldn't have to remind you, I'm a doctor.
Goes in the hot seat.
I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions that I want them answered immediately.
I'm your huckleberry.
It's Inside the Dome.
Did he just call it a dome?
Dome.
Just a Jay and Keith edition of Inside the Dome with Dr. Richard Sanders. Instead of taking questions from the crowd, as we normally do, we thought we would talk about a few different things, and Doc more than willing, as usual, to talk and answer all the questions we throw at him.
We have also upgraded Doc's seat. He no longer has the old swivel chair. This is the couch. What do you think? You like it?
Yeah, now I know where you guys sleep during the day.
I just about did. I had three games on in here during the NCAA tournament, during the first round of the tournament. And I just about did nod off in here because it gets dark when you turn the lights out. So,
I don't need that couch. My couch in my office actually is a bed. I can actually fold
that
out.
That couch was washed about the last time you washed your coffee mug.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, boy.
Stop it. Well, a lot of shots being taken over here by my coffee cup. I mean, how do you break in a coffee cup if it doesn't have good stains on it? That's all I want to know.
Yeah. That's a great question. Well, Doc, it's the end of the school year. And certainly the landscape keeps shifting around college athletics and is going to continue to shift throughout the summer. But why don't you just kind of update folks on where we stand at ETSU as the storm kind of swirls all around us here?
Well, you know, first of all, I think, you know, we had a great spring and it's certainly not over yet. But, you know, when your men's and women's tennis team, men's and women's golf team win SoCon championships, I mean, I think that's pretty amazing. I don't know if that's ever happened.
It's never happened before.
So, I mean, kudos to our student athletes, but also to, you know, Ricky Rojas for the incredible job he did taking over last year, the men's program in the middle of the season, winning the conference last year, and then maintaining that. And then, of course, the great job he's done with the women's program. And then, you know, really excited for you know, Coach Shelton, the women's team. I was actually down in Auburn, Alabama, the first 2 days of the NCAA regional, and it was nice to see, you know, our kids competing with the second day we played with Georgia and Miami. So I think just being, you know, with those teams tells you a little bit of the quality of our program, because I'm sure they spend a whole lot more money on it than we do. So I'm really happy for them. I think, you know, that golf course was a very difficult golf course. And, you know, I think our kids, it was a great experience for them. You know, it was a great experience. So happy for them. And then, of course, you know, coming up Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of the next week, our men's team plays over at Chapel Hill in the NCAA tournament. You know, the last 3 years we've qualified for the Nationals. And I think our team's seated fourth in that regional. Five teams go, so hopefully, you know, they'll play to their capabilities and once again represent us in the national championship. But irrespective of whether they do or they don't, it's been a great season. They've won tournaments. We have, you know, Matt Egge is one of the top players in the country, recognized. He's right there for, you know, the PGA college situation, where I think he's eighth or ninth in the country if he can maintain or move up a little bit. He'll have some sort of status on, you know, Korn Ferry Tour. So yeah, that's pretty impressive. And so I'm happy for, you know, Coach Amos. He's done a great job, and very proud of all those athletes for what they've been able to achieve in the spring. And of course, baseball's, you know, playing well right now. I think, I don't know if we're in second or third place in the SoCon, but I think we have a real good shot. Second place, we have Wofford. I think this weekend, if we can win a couple down there, I think, you know, we're in really good shape. But the critical piece, I think, is you get a bye the first day and automatically get into the double elimination part of the tournament. And so I think at that point, you know, we're looking pretty good, because hopefully, you know, some of those teams will use up some of their pitching. And as we all know, as those tournaments get late into the tournament, pitching gets to be a little challenged, and that's good for us because we do hit pretty well. So I think, you know, that they, I'm looking forward to them and what they can accomplish. So good luck to Coach Panucci and the guys. They've had a nice season.
Yeah, they've had a great season, and it's just, it's great to see Joe just walking down. He's almost got a little skip in his step right now, the way he walks down the hallway. He's excited about coaching this group. And you mentioned Matt's, he's actually on the watch list for the Haskins Award, which I believe is, like, that's like the men's golf equivalent of the Heisman, National Player of the Year. Like, that's a big deal. And that's awesome just to have. And it's great to just kind of remember what this is all about, which is about seeing ETSU students competing at the highest level and being next to Miami and Georgia, like you talk about with women's golf, and being able to be among the best players in the country with Matt's, and to have a baseball team that's just winning a lot of games right now, has set a record, a Thomas Stadium record for wins in a season with 23. It just seems like a great time to just sort of check and remember, as much as we talk about money, as much as we talk about the political maneuverings and everything that goes on, it's just great to remember what it's all about, which is seeing great young people do great things in the school's colors.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think sometimes we get so bogged down with, you know, those things that are going on in college athletics and focus so much on, you know, the changes and the negativity of things that are going and how different things are. And, you know, the model is dramatically different. But, it, you know, when you look and see, you know, our kids are competing, you know, they're having a great experience. They're being coached up. There's a lot of good things that are going on. And hopefully, you know, we will continue that throughout whatever happens in the landscape of college athletics. But I think that's one thing we can't lose track of is, you know, these young people are having a great experience. They're getting to play in NCAA championships. They're representing ETSU, and they're getting that ETSU brand all over the country. So people know who we are, and, you know, the respect that we get from a lot of the people that we play is real.
And let's go over this, because we just did it this past weekend. We did it on Monday. Graduation, I mean, there's so much talk about, and we're going to get into it, the portal and the NIL and all these other things. But I was able to announce 13 players that were competing on graduation day that were able to get recognized in front of their families on Monday. And there were other athletes that did get a chance to walk across the stage. I think it was upwards of 55, close to 60 graduating folks that earned a degree on top of this, which gets lost in the shuffle as well.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that's really, you know, sad about where we are. We never even talk about the academic piece anymore because, you know, the NIL and the transfer portal are so much out there. But, you know, we do a great job. Our academic success people really work with our student athletes. You know, we really strongly encourage our coaches to stay on top of the student athletes to make sure they're successful. So, yeah, you feel good about that. A lot of these young people have come in, and, you know, some have come in with, you know, strong academic backgrounds. Some have come in without strong academic backgrounds. And through the support of, you know, our staff, you know, that you see them walk across that stage, and that's the ultimate goal. That's the real championship trophy.
Well, I think you just described me and Keith, the non-academic strong background and the strong academic background, and then here we are doing a podcast. So it works both ways.
Hey, right? I made the dean's list one semester, okay? Like, off.
You think I made the dean's list at all?
It was my last semester, and I thought I got a letter in the mail. My dad said, hey, you got a letter from ETSU, and I said, uh-oh, they're taking my diploma back. No, I made the dean's list. I thought they'd send it to the wrong person, but yeah.
That was a fun game a while back. I broke out my transcript and had
I remember
Keith,
that.
Guess my grades. That was a fun game. Too. Yeah,
yeah, I know.
A couple
years ago, I saw my sixth grade report card and put it on social media, and I think my daughter had a real joy out of that because I think I got a D in arithmetic, and so when she was growing up, I always on her pretty hard because she wasn't a great math student. So she got great joy out of that.
I was not a great math student either. The moment I could stop taking math classes, I did. I think I got like an 82 in prob and stats as a freshman here, and I was like, that's it, done. Never doing that again. So well, I feel that pain.
It took me three times on problem stats. I can prove that back here. So that being said, we make a joke sometimes that Dr. Chandler is a human calculator because sometimes you'll say something. I can see him doing the math and he spits out numbers. So, you know, you took to math. It didn't take long for you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty good at it. I was probably in the sixth grade, had different interests at that time, wasn't paying much attention, you know, maybe playing baseball or football or something, you know.
Well, what you have paid a lot of attention to is this ever-changing landscape with the NIL and, you know, legislation that's going on with the House versus NCAA and all that. So that being said, we've gone a couple of months, I think, since we talked last or a month and a half or so. Even since then, it has drastically changed even more.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty incredible to me that the NCAA does such a, for lack of a better term, poor job of really communicating what's going on. I mean, I get more information from D1 Ticker than you do from, you know, the NCAA. Apparently, right now, there have been negotiations going on, you know, I guess in Dallas with, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC and the NCAA staff and all their attorneys dealing with, you know, this big case, which is probably going to be the one thing that really sets the stage for the future of college athletics. And it's House versus NCAA, where I think three students have sued the NCAA, and I think USC and the Pac-12 about they feel that they should, that they were restrained from getting, you know, NIL money, so they figure their 4 years in college that the NCAA owes them the what they would have earned in NIL. So once again, this gets to be, you know, an antitrust violation, or that's the case that they're making. And it seems like every time there's an antitrust case, you always lose. And so the since it's a class action suit, I think every men's and women's basketball player and every football player would have a right to claim some sort of compensation if they win the case. And the estimated amount, I think, is, you know, once again, reading this isn't from the NCAA, this is reading this from D1 Ticker, is about $1.2-1.3 billion, and because it's antitrust,
it's trebled.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, it could get to $4.5 billion, not million, $4.5 billion. So right now, from what you read, is that they're down there trying to come to a settlement, and the settlement looks like it would be I think I saw somewhere about $2.6 billion would be paid over 10 years to the class action claimants and how that will be determined. I guess the NCAA has some insurance. The NCAA would pay some, and then the colleges would have to pay the rest. And I think probably the Power Five guys would have to pay the lion's share of that. So that's interesting. But I think they're worried that if this thing goes to trial, that it will be a $4.5 billion payment. So I guess the other parts of that. So one of the issues with that is the actual settlement of the case. But I think a second part of that is, okay, what is the plan forward?
Right.
I think that's a requirement for the settlement. And what it looks like they're saying is that there would basically be a salary cap. That's not the term they use, but basically a salary cap of somewhere between $17 and $22 million that the Power Five guys would be able to compensate student athletes for their name, image, and likeness. But I think also they're saying that to be in this upper echelon of college athletics, power, pick a number, 2, 3, 4, whatever it will be, that those schools will have to add 100 scholarships for the non-revenue sports. And the other thing as part of it is that teams could basically scholarship their whole roster. So
right.
In baseball, if you had 32, I think you can have 32 baseball players, all 32 could be on full scholarship. So those kind of things has dramatic impact for folks like us, because all that does is just shrink the pool of available quality players. So now, baseball, what is 11.9 or 11.7?
11.7, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So they can only do the equivalency of 11.7 scholarships. But if, pick a school, if University of Texas wants to have 32 guys on full scholarship, they can do that. So that pool shrinks considerably. Back in the day, you may be too young to remember this, but back in the day before there were limits on scholarships, the old days of UCLA, they would have 20 of the best basketball players in the country on full scholarship at UCLA, and they just, they just kind of controlled the top players in the country, and those guys weren't playing, but they were keeping Southern Cal and, some of their other competitors from getting those guys. So that's clearly was one of the things that the NCAA did years ago to somewhat level the playing field, that the power guys couldn't monopolize all the good players because they had a limit as to how many they could have. So that looks like that limit probably will go out the window. I think there'll be that that salary cap, and I guess what they're trying to do, I think the salary cap $20 million was determined by that they took an average of the Power Five guys, and I think that's 20% of what those schools are paying, something like that, or I think about $100 million they're saying is the average budget for FBS guys. So
right.
That's kind of what it looks like, and I think that will be I think in the next, I don't think it's imminent, but I think probably in the next month or two that'll probably be settled.
And there's so much about the revenue sharing idea that is not thought out yet, so we can't really plan for it. I can't imagine what it's like trying to future-proof an athletic department from your perspective right now. It's just, it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. We're trying right now in the strategic plan, and a lot of people have shared their information. We've met with a number of community groups. We sent out surveys to try to understand exactly what are the priorities of the athletic department, because I think the reality of it is we are going to have to make some hard decisions if we are going to be competitive in the sports that are high priority. So that's going to be a difficult thing. How much, and I think basically eventually it is going to come into the athletic department that we're going to compensate student athletes for their name, image, and likeness. So what's the balance between, compensating, those programs that are your revenue generators, men's and women's basketball and football, with the investment in the other sports, So that's kind of really a balancing act that we have to figure, because while, I don't see a big incremental rise in the funding that we have. Mm-hmm. Our fans have been great. We do a good job selling tickets because of the support of our fan base. Our fan base has been supportive in regard to, private gifts. But, there's a point where we can't go to the well. We can't squeeze, you know, any more money out of people because they've done a lot. And we hope people will always do more. But, you know, the reality of it is it can't match what the cost of running an athletic department is. You throw in that plus inflation and some other things that are out there. So we're going to have to make some hard decisions.
Now, the other part of this is, I mean, we haven't even layered on Title IX and how that could affect revenue distribution. Does it have to be equal across men's and women's sports? How does it have to be distributed on a per athlete basis? Like what, how is that going to work? And there won't be any clarity on it for months, maybe years down the line. That kind of brings me to this looming specter, almost this holy grail of college athletics, which is federal legislation. I have kind of been of the mind that pursuing this is a wild goose chase, that this we need to solve these problems proactively, internally, on our own, as a collection of institutions. But as time's gone on, it's become clear to me, and I wonder of your perspective on it, that federal legislation is going to be necessary to untangle all this mess at some point.
Well, you know, I think so much of where we've gotten to over the last 5 years are based upon court cases, you know, and antitrust violations. I mean, I think that's kind of become, you know, the go-to claim for anybody that wants to sue the NCAA. They just claim antitrust violation and, you know, they seem to win. So I think, yeah, there's going to have to be something done, you know, and I don't know what it is, you know, having, you know, Congress be too involved.
It can be just, be careful what you wish for. Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't, you know, you got some loose cannons out there, and, you know, when you have, you know, the wide range of opinions, you know, on both right and left, you wonder how you can get that to the middle. So, that's going to be a challenge. I know the NCAA, that's kind of been over the last year and a half, that's been their major focus, and I'm not sure they've had, you know, they've had a lot of success in moving that, you know, moving that down the road very, very easily. And, you know, in an election year, I think that's going to be tough. So I would think, you know, until we know who is the, you know, the president of the United States, I'm not sure you're going to get anything done. But, yeah, hopefully they'd come in to give some sanity to this, and I think that's also one of the critical things in that House court case is that the NCAA needs some assurance that every time they turn around, they're not going to get sued for an antitrust violation. And I think that's one of the real barriers to getting that thing done.
Well, let's talk a little bit about we talk about NIL. The biggest thing that I guess is with that is the players, and the players, the biggest thing for them right now is transfer portal. And it continues to grow and reach new heights at unbelievable. It's over, 2,000 men's basketball players. You're talking, you know, 1,400 on the women's side. I mean, there's a lot of players out there, and that's just basketball. Football, that's open up as well. Other sports, just talk about sort of the portal, where we stand, what is being discussed, and is it still one of those that we need to have the other shoe fall before the portal can be addressed?
Well, you know, the portal for basketball is now closed, so, you know, the people that are here now are here. One thing I think everybody needs to understand is that when you're taking these transfers, we have no assurance. And people say, oh, well, they're committed or they've signed. They have not signed anything that is binding. The only thing that's binding is a national letter of intent. And if you're a transfer, you can't sign one of those. So the only thing that they sign is a scholarship. And that allows, you know, us to deal with certain things, move forward with the announcement, that sort of thing. But don't be confused and think if they've signed that they're going to be committed to anywhere, because you see that sometimes now some of these players are starting to jump. I just saw a kid that was going to VCU who they were all excited about, now is going to South Carolina, and they can't understand why. Well, these kids can move at any time. You know, that's one of the real challenges of any athletic program right now with the transfer portal. We had a women's basketball player that the last day of the portal at 3:30 went in the portal, mm-hmm. you know, who had given us no indication whatsoever that she was going to do that. So that really creates havoc for a program because you didn't recruit anybody because you thought that individual was there. You had confidence in them. They've never shared anything with you that there was any thought of them transferring and have actually told you that they're not, and then they do. So that gets to be very difficult for the coaches. One of the things that I think everybody's kind of lost track of is the transfer portal has created an absolute nightmare for coaches. I mean, basically, they used to have some time where there was a little bit of downtime, but now because of the transfer portal, they're continually recruit all year. They've got to spend time with their current players. It's really, really challenging. It's very, very difficult for coaches now. You know, a lot of those folks, you know, make a lot of money, so you know, you kind of realize that, but it's the stress. And like I say, you know, last year we had Josh Taylor who did that, you know, the last day of the transfer portal. We didn't recruit over the top of him. We told him he's one of our guys, and then at the last minute he goes in the portal. I mean, that's pretty tough to deal with because now, you know, you're way behind in trying to recruit a substitute for him, and you haven't done it. So yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult world. I think, you know, once again, the NCAA hasn't been very proactive to look at the challenges. We clearly need a shorter window where the transfer portal is open so coaches know, you know, how to deal with it, how programs know how to deal with it. You know, that's one of the things I think is very important. Maybe you have, you know, once the pairings are announced in the NCAA tournament, you have a month or something like that for them to go in the portal. But yeah, I think that's very difficult right now. The transfer portal is like you said. I mean, and then the other thing is just the mindset right now. I think everybody thinks it's cool to go in the transfer portal. You've got a lot of people who are in these student athletes' ears telling them you can get money, you can get this, you can get that. You need to go in the transfer portal, see what your worth is. So yeah, it's difficult. And then, you know, in connection with that, of course, is NIL and what people are paying these student athletes. You never know what's real and what's not real, but we're hearing, you know, things like some of the guys that we were recruiting, you know, they're getting $100,000. These are perimeter players who may have averaged 8, 9, 10 points a game. They're getting $100,000 in cars to go to go where they're going. So, you know, that's a challenge. It's out there trying to figure out what is the right compensation to recruit a player. How does that balance in with the rest of your players? It's a puzzle. There's no question about it. We've been very fortunate, I think, with, you know, our Bucks for Good collective. You know, Pete Peterson has done a nice job, but also some of our supporters, Joe Trujillo and Wade Farmer and Kelly Wolf, have really jumped in there to help Pete really this year kind of get things rolling. So I think, you know, Coach Savage, Coach Mock, you know, Coach Lamb, they have a reasonable amount of opportunity to help student athletes from a compensation standpoint. Not they're helping them, but to work with the collective. Now that in recently the NCAA has come out with some changes in NIL legislation where now universities can work with a third party and the third party can be the collective, so we can help the student athlete work with the collective to get a fair compensation for their name, image, and likeness.
All right, that's coming up here at the end of the month, right? Southern Conference meetings. What are some of the topics you think you guys will be discussing?
The end of the month, you know, I think once again there'll be a lot of discussion about NIL. You know, the other thing that is out there is, you know, cost of attendance, Another thing that's out there is the intra-conference transfer rule. Those are always, you know, areas for discussion. I think the other thing that's out there is, you know, just the financial piece of it too. You know, right now, are there ways to be realistic in regard to saving money for the member institutions? Things like, you know, championships. Does it make sense for, you know, all members to go to all the championships? Should you earn, you know, do the top four go to the soccer championship, or do the top four go to the volleyball championship? Because those things start to get pretty costly from an athletic department standpoint. And, you know, I think you could go back. I mean, there's arguments, pros and cons to it, but I think that's one thing that will be discussed in this conference, you know, because I think as inflation goes, the cost of everything, we need to be, you know, pretty aware of those kind of things, you know, to spend, pick a number, you know, $20,000 for a team to go to a conference championship when they're the 10th place team in the conference. They really have almost no chance to win the conference and go to the NCAA, or you're just really throwing that money away. And the cost of them being there, I mean, there's a lot of things like that. Look at other things. You know, the ESPN, I think that's the ESPN contract, you know, I think that's not too far off. So I think there'll be discussions as to what's the best way to continue with, you know, our exposure to broadcasting games, that sort of thing. Because you guys know probably better than anybody, that's getting more and more difficult for us to do 65 games. That's a lot of games. And, you know, we aren't getting that much compensation from ESPN to offset a lot of the costs that are involved with that. So you guys know that. And as time goes by, a lot of our technology and equipment starts to wear out. You know, there's costs to replace that. So, yeah, I mean, I think those will be some of the big discussions. And, of course, you know, all the, you know, the landscape right now of where things are going. What is the future of a mid-major athletic conference look like? What's going to happen to the group of five schools? What's going to happen to the upper echelon of FCS? Is there, you know, are there ways to join those? I don't know, but those are going to be discussions.
Well, let's talk, you know, on a positive note right now, season tickets are on sale,
right?
And football season tickets are up considering, you know, new head coach, excitement around the program, men's basketball ticket, and women's basketball. All the, you know, the big three, if you will, the basketballs, the football, the season tickets are up. Fans are very excited about season coming along. And, you know, at least one way, again, revenue to help the department, all that is season tickets. And so, again, we're seeing a nice little increase on those.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. You know, the longer, you know, I'm around, you know, Coach Lamb, Coach Mock, you know, Coach Savage, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, they're going to have competitive teams, teams that not only competitive, but I think they're fun to watch. And, you know, I think their players are the kind of people that you can get behind and really start to connect with and enjoy. So, yeah, I mean, it's an important piece, you know, and I think, like I said, Coach Lamb and Coach Mock and Coach Savage, you know, they're people that you want to have success. I mean, they're great in the community. If people out there need any of our student athletes to be involved in a charitable initiative, or even just, you know, come out to the community and do some things for kids, you know, they need to reach out, because, you know, our coaches are very, very willing to do whatever they can to make the quality of life better for not only Johnson City, but for Kingsport, Bristol, Elizabethton, Greenville, wherever, you know. So I hope everybody, you know, gets connected and engaged with us, and I think if you do, you'll really enjoy the time and the relationship with our coaches and our student athletes, because that's kind of, I think, our secret sauce to being successful, is to really being very, very embedded in the community and being a big part of it. So we really want to do that.
Well, Doc, we appreciate the time. That's all we got for today. I guess we'll try to catch up with you a little bit more once we get into the summer, get through some of these court cases, get through the Southern Conference meetings. There might be more news here. You know, I don't know, 6-8 weeks from now, we'll get together again, do a little catch-up in the middle of the summer.
That'd be great. And, you know, like you always – like we've done in the past, people have questions, please feel free to, you know, text or communicate with Jay or Keith. Any questions, we're more than willing to answer.
All right, thank you, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
Thanks, guys.
All right, great stuff from Doc there. Really appreciate him coming on and talking with us. And it's interesting to hear what he thinks is going to be important on the agenda at the SoCon meetings. And I can say from our perspective, like we've talked about this before, what we make for like the rights fee from the TV contract. If we needed to replace the instant replay machine that runs our highlights, that costs more than we get in media rights, in TV rights from ESPN in a year. So that's, that's something that I think is, are we going to do fewer events? Are we going to get more money? What's going to happen there? How do we proceed with that is going to be really important. So, and community events, I talked with Mock yesterday and she talked about something that they did at UNC Asheville that they're going to do again this year. By the way, Honey Brown now on staff at ETSU, but, former UNC Asheville head coach was Mock's longtime assistant down in Asheville, was her successor when Mock left, and now is on staff with ETSU. She got to meet Honey yesterday, and she was an absolute delight. I think you'll like her a lot. But talked about a way to meet the new players on this team, since there are going to be so many of them. I think she called it an old folks camp, kind of, but it's not like it's like old folks, like as in you're not a prospect, you're an older, you're 30s, 40s and on. You get a chance to meet the new players on the team and to interact with them in an environment that's kind of like in Brooks Gym. So I don't know if that's going to happen here, but I think it's a great idea, and I'd be on the lookout for details about it if something pops in the near future.
So like a fantasy camp, like the old school, like you can go do the baseball fantasy camp, go down,
yeah, kind of, sort of,
players and.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I think that'd be pretty fun.
I don't know why when you said the old part, you were just staring at me. I don't know if you meant to do that on purpose.
I was looking for your reaction because I knew that would get a reaction from you. Because you always do like an eyebrow raise. It's a double eyebrow raise, and like you tilt your head back, and you're like, oh, yeah, as if like an understanding or a curiosity comes across your face.
Well, as you get older, you're never old. Isn't that something? It's amazing.
You're like only that. As old as you feel, Jay.
Oof.
That's why
if that's the case.
That's why I'm 120.
All right, so that was the show today. We'll come back next week and then start giving you more content. We'll start talking hopefully some of these assistant coaches that have been hired in the sports, football and the basketballs, and any other news in ETSU Athletics or the Southern Conference, NCAA, all that and more on Jay and Keith.
Well, you said it.
You gotta be kidding me!